couple survey questions for you. How many of you in school, how many of you had a different teacher for every year of your schooling? Raise your hand. One. Okay, that's good. I'm glad it's not more than that. How many of you had the same teacher for 2 years or more? Raise your hand. Okay, just keep your hands up. How many of you had for 3 years or more? So those that didn't can drop. 3 years more? 4 years or more? 5 years or more? One? Okay. 6 years or more? Still? Wow. 7 years? Okay. Wonderful. Interesting. How long do most of the teachers, for the school that you grew up in, how long did most of the teachers teach? So again, raise your hands. Just go ahead and everyone raise your hand to start off with. Do most of the teachers teach 2 years or more? Do most teachers teach for 2 years at the school where you grew up? Most teachers teach for 2 years at least. What about 3 years? Is that average? 4 years. 5 years. 6 years. Wow, excellent. Okay, so there's still a few that are like that. Great. And I was thinking of, more where you were a student. How long are you planning to teach? I'm not going to hand raise this now, but, have you thought about that? How long are you planning to teach? When my brother asked me about teaching, whether he should teach school or not, I told him, I said, if you're planning to teach just 1 year of school, then I would recommend you not teach at all, if you're just planning to teach 1 year. And I'm not saying anything against those that just teach 1 year and quit. Sometimes we go in with good intentions and we teach it a year, but then we find out that it's just not for us. And that's okay. Or maybe something comes up. You get married or something. That happens too. But is that your plan, just to teach 1 year and then you're going to quit? If that's your plan, then I would say you go to your school board and just tell them, look, is that okay with y'all? That shouldn't be your plan. So obviously, as you've seen through these questions, we have a problem in our school. And there's one more question I wanted to ask you too, is those of you that had long-term teachers, or maybe those of you that had a different teacher for every year, did that help you? Was that good for you? Was that enjoyable in school, switching teachers every year, or was it just normal?
Well, I was normal for 5 years.
Okay. 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 So that was a little different situation there. But if you have, do you like to have the same teacher the next year, or for 4 years, or do you like changing, having a new teacher every year, having new procedures and new, yeah, I don't know. I think our schools are becoming weak because our teachers are changing out too often. Having the same teacher for a long time helps promote structure in schools. And so we have a problem. Why do teachers quit? Do not become one of the 50% of teachers who quit because they feel discouraged, alone, overworked, and underpaid. Constantly falling into pitfalls is depressing, discouraging, and quitting. The takeaway for today is awareness of the common pitfalls is the first step to staying out of them. That comes from Jonathan Erb. Awareness of the common pitfalls is the first step to staying out of them. You're driving down the road and there's a bunch of potholes, maybe in someone's driveway or something. That's kind of annoying, right? You turn in someone's driveway and just you're trying to turn this way and that way and this way and you just seem like you end up still hitting all of them. But the good thing is, good news for teachers, for first year teachers, if you're worried about pitfalls, you can't hit all of them. So you will miss a few. So don't get discouraged. I said earlier in the class on preparation that you should not feel qualified to teach. But I feel very qualified to teach this class. I've got lots of experience falling into pits. So we don't need to repeat all the mistakes of others. And there's different quotes. The only thing we learn from history is that we don't learn from history. And I hope you can learn from some of the mistakes that I have made. Okay. First, I have this divided up into four main pitfalls. Does everyone have a handout? Does anyone need a handout, I should say? still one person back there. So it should be a double-sided page, and I'm sorry it's not very well designed, but there's four main areas of pitfalls. First one is a faulty self-concept. The second one is ignorance of technique. The third one is poor planning. And the fourth one is ineffective discipline. And there's probably more. There's thousands of ways you can make mistakes, but I didn't think it would be very helpful to list them all today. It might be difficult to remember them all. So I wanted to go over some of the main ones that I struggle with, and I made a lot of these are mistakes that I have made in teaching. And I want, you know, I hope you can avoid some of these mistakes. So the first one, faulty self-concept. So let's do another survey. How many of y'all are proud? How many of you are humble? Okay, I didn't quite get the... I didn't expect anyone to raise their hand and say they're proud, but thank you for being honest with us. I appreciate that. Maybe you're humble. But, you know, we all do have... I guess it just depends how we word that. We all do. If I would ask you how many of you struggle with a bit of pride in your life, then you would probably raise your hand for sure. But we all do. I think we all have a little bit of pride in us, and that is one of the problems we face when we teach. The first problem I have there is wanting to be liked too much. Wanting the students to like us too much. And there is nothing wrong. Oh, I forgot. I was going to tell y'all before I start. A lot of the things that I'm going to be saying, or some of the things I'm saying, may be very controversial. And you may not even agree with me. And they may be wrong. So I'm going to look to Jonah and Conrad to correct me at the end if I said something that was totally wrong. But this is one of the mistakes, I think, is we want the students to like us too much. And there's nothing wrong with wanting the students to like us. I hope your students like you as a teacher. And one question that you should never ask a student is, do you like your teacher? That's like asking my son Alec, do you like your daddy? Well, he doesn't really have much choice in that, does he? You know, students don't choose their teachers, do they? So it's not something that you should ask a student, do you like your teacher? Well, that's beside the point. That's not even a relevant question. That's not the point of school, is to like your teacher. But we hope they do like you. But let's not change our teaching and center our teaching around causing them to like us. That's not the job of the teacher. The job of the teacher, it is the teacher's job to cause the student to
learn.
Not to like you, but to learn. Okay. So if liking you and learning you don't fit in the same category, then sometimes you have to choose the learning one instead of the liking one. It's okay to want to be liked, but not at the expense of doing the right thing. And this is the controversial one. Can you really be their friend? Should you be a friend to your students? And there's a quote in here that I'm going to read. It says, be friendly, caring, loving, and sensitive, but do not be their friend. They have enough on their hands with their own friends. Let me explain a little bit more. See, friends do favors for friends. Can we have extra recess today? Can we play for story? Can we skip math class today? We finished all our work. Can we go outside and play? If you're their friend, then of course the answer will be yes, yes. And then one day they ask a favor and you say, suddenly you realize, you know, skipping math class, the school board might not like that too much if I do that too often or whatever. And you say no, and then they get upset at you. I thought you were my friend. So maybe it depends on the definition of friend. What is a friend? Friends don't give grades. You don't give grades. They don't admonish each other. They don't tell their friends what to do. They don't make you work hard and then grade you for your work. That's the teacher's job. Be the teacher. Be an example for them. Don't join in the debate about which truck is the best, whether it's a Ford or a Chevy. How many of you remember that in school, arguing about trucks? That's a very common argument. Don't join in that argument. Please don't. Because if you join in the argument, then who's going to end the argument? There's no teacher anymore. Don't be their friend in that way. Now, I guess a true friend does admonish his friends, right? So in a sense, a true friend would do some of those things. But when I say friend, maybe I'm meaning the more buddy or pal. Don't be their buddy. Don't be their pal. You're supposed to be the adult in there. You're supposed to be the role model, the example, the one they look up to, not the one that they can get favors from whenever they want to. Okay, The second point there is getting discouraged. Lots of teachers get discouraged. So why do teachers get discouraged? Proverbs 13 verse 12 says, "Hope deferred maketh the heart sick, but when the desire cometh, it is the tree of life." Were your expectations too high, perhaps? You know, and it's good to have high expectations. That's very important to have high expectations. But what are your expectations? Are you expecting the first year to just be a, you know, it's kind of like romance novels. You know, in romance novels, the handsome young man and the stunningly beautiful young girl get married and they live happily ever after. It's dangerous to think of it like that for school. Things are not always going to go perfectly. So if they don't go perfectly, don't get discouraged. That's just life. Romance novels are not real life. Don't try to be somebody else. Don't try to copy. I had an excellent teacher when I was in school. But if I would just go and teach and I would try to do everything exactly the way he did it and just try to sound like him and say the things that he did, it wouldn't work. Not all of us can teach like Jonah Avina does or like Conrad does. If I would try to copy them, you would probably laugh at me and not get much out of it. Just be yourself. We each have our strengths and weaknesses. Now, we need to learn from each other. Yes, absolutely. But let's not try to copy each other. Be yourself. Focus on your strengths and try to work on your weaknesses. One experienced teacher, he gave me some advice during my first year of teaching. I think I'd been teaching for several weeks. He told me, and this is a question you're going to get asked a lot, so be prepared. So people come to you and they'll just, you know, they're so nice. They want to start a conversation. They want to take interest in what's going on. So they say, "How's it going?" And you're in your first couple weeks of school. He told me, he said, don't answer those people. He said, just tell them it's too soon to tell. And the idea is you can't judge yourself by the first couple weeks of school. It's probably going to be a little bit rough the first couple weeks or maybe the first month or two. Don't get discouraged. That's part of it. It's part of the learning process. That's why you teach for more than 1 year, because the second year always is much easier than the first year. C is letting little things affect your emotions. Letting the little things affect your emotions. And this might be a little more of a lady problem than men problem. And I don't mean that at all in a slam. Ladies are much more intuitive in teaching as far as seeing problems in the students. They can, you know, my co-teachers, they would often be able to sense that there was some disrespect going on, or they would hear things or see things, facial expressions. They could read a lot into things that I couldn't and I wasn't able to. I didn't notice that, but they did. And they, you know, they would tell me, and that's good. But don't allow some little things to affect your emotions or to make you discouraged. Like, just for example, when my wife was teaching school, she had a student who was a little bit cut up, liked to make her laugh. And anyway, and one day, this student walks into the classroom at the beginning of the day, and his pockets are just bulging with acorns. Okay, well, don't think you'll need those in school. I guess we could have used them to add, subtract, multiply, and divide. But, she said, told us his name, said, please go out to the parking lot and take them out, please, and come back in. Okay, well, he went out, was gone for a while, and she was beginning to wonder what's going on. So she goes out, goes to the door, opens the door, looks out, and he's out there lying flat on his back or stomach, and he was going back and forth, rubbing against the ground, and he's like, "They won't come out." Now, well, she was like, "Okay, just take them out. Use your hands and take them out, and then come in." You know, and so how do you handle that? Was that just disrespect and disobedience? Let's bring him in and give him a good whooping or something. You know, she could have allowed that to make her feel, "He's not listening to me. He's just being rebellious." Or she could just, you know, laugh at him. That's probably what he was wanting anyway. And don't let little things like that get you down or make you think they don't like you. They might do something one day and you think, "They don't like me. They're mad at me about this," or whatever. Don't let those things affect you too much. They're just children. Or maybe here's another thing that might happen. You know, you have a substitute teacher one day, and after the next day, oh, the students are just raving how much they like their substitute teacher. That was just amazing. And we're thinking, yeah, you don't like me, right? That's perfectly normal. They will always like the substitute teacher every time. Because the substitute teacher gives them candy and extra recess and all that other stuff. It doesn't mean they don't like you. It just means they like substitute teachers. All right, D is feeling too responsible for the students. Feeling too responsible for the students. And again, this might sound like it contradicts some of the other things we've been talking about this week. You know, the teacher is responsible to cause the student to learn. But like Jonah said, even Jesus, the perfect teacher, had a student that failed. And there is really nothing more depressing to a teacher than failing grades. I've had experience with failing grades. And it's hard if you're checking the spelling words again and it's 35% again after, you know, and 1 week we say, okay, so this week, look, I'd like for you to every day go up to the board and write out your spelling words. I'll say them to you. You work really hard, and then it's 50%. And sometimes, don't let those things get you down, allow you to give up. Don't feel too responsible. Do your sustainable best. And if Jonathan Erb was here, he would say, you know, I probably could jump up on top of that desk, and I probably could vault up on top of that cabinet there and crawl all the way over there if there was a big enough monster. I might even be able to climb up that window and hang from the light. But that's not our sustainable best, okay? We need to do our best. You know, we can really perform sometimes when we need to, but let's make sure it's our sustainable best. It's something we can keep on. And there's times when you might have to work 12 hours at school to get something done. That's okay, but that shouldn't be your pattern that every day you're spending 12 hours at school. All right, so sometimes there's only so much you can do. And this kind of goes along with the next point, being too perfectionistic. How many of you have filled in all of your blanks so far? Okay. All right, very good. So most of us probably tend to be a little bit perfectionistic. And I thought about leaving a blank in here that I wasn't going to even fill in just to see how many people would be very disturbed about that. You know, do the blanks all have to be filled in order for you to teach school this year? Probably not. Now, if it really bothers you and you miss one, you can come to me afterwards. But they don't all have to be filled in, you know. It's just to help you. Whatever you can take, whatever is useful to you. If something's not useful to you, don't write it down. Write down the things that are useful and important. All right, now that doesn't relate to school, though. But how much time do we spend checking over their work in school? How much time do you agonize about whether to count a problem wrong? Is this wrong? Or maybe it's half wrong? Or maybe one-fourth wrong? Or maybe we shouldn't count it wrong. Is one percentage point really going to make that big of a difference? So a lot of times it doesn't make that big of a difference in the overall grade. I've noticed on a test grade, you know, because some of my students are very concerned about their test grades, and that's wonderful. And, you know, if they get a 95%, it's really disturbing if you have a 99.5% average. And so, but if you actually calculate it in, it doesn't make that big of it. Now, I'm not saying we need to be careless. We should definitely be careful and do things, but oftentimes we spend too much time on those things that we end up not having enough time for the important things, like studying for the next lesson. The problem with wanting things to be perfect is that we often become discouraged when they don't end up perfect. So let's be careful with being too perfectionistic. It can cause you to feel like a failure when things don't go perfectly or you don't have time to get all your work done. It's a bad week if you spend 12 hours every day there and don't have time for anything else. Make sure you don't neglect important things. And F is resisting advice or not asking for help. And I want to read a story from here, The Seven Laws of the Learner by Bruce Wilkinson. And I want you to listen as I'm reading. This is your homework assignment. There's three main characters I want you to listen for. Listen for the three main characters, and I want you to tell me what a defining characteristic is of each one. One word, in other words, think of one word to describe each of these three main characters. So, name the three main characters and one word to describe those characters. "These particular trout are very difficult to catch," he said. "They suck in your fly, sense the hook, and immediately spit it out. You have to set the hook in that split second or he's gone. Do you think you can do that?" "Of course," I replied. "After all, hadn't I caught all kinds of fish in lakes, ponds, and the ocean? Trout fishing in the Colorado Mountains would be a snap." The guide continued his instructions. "If you cast over there and let your fly float downstream for about 20 or 30 feet, you'll probably get a few bites." I did as he said, but nothing happened. Within seconds, he said, "You missed one." And then a moment later, "There, you missed another one." "What on earth are you talking about? I hadn't felt or seen anything." "You don't believe a couple of trout actually bit your hook, do you?" I guess he couldn't miss my look of skepticism. "Let me have your pole and I'll show you what I mean." On the next cast, he caught a big old trout right where my fly had been. I couldn't believe my eyes. Over and over again, our trusty guide worked with us. He would encourage us by saying, "It's in the feel of the pole and the fly's movement in the water. You've got to learn to tempt the trout." Nonetheless, hours went by without my catching a fish, and I was beginning to lose hope. Then all of a sudden, I began to catch those trout right where we had fished earlier. I could now feel the river. Everything he said began to click. What a thrill. Later that afternoon, a young teenager, carrying a large red and yellow tackle box, climbed down the bank where we were fishing. We smiled encouragingly. But then he took out some large lures used to catch bass and even saltwater fish, but certainly not trout. Our guide worked his way up to the young kid and began to instruct him on those lures, that those lures didn't appeal to trout, but a certain kind of fly did. That young man told the guide to get lost. He'd fish with his favorite lures and he'd catch the fish just like he did back home. Soon our guide led us around the bend to a different patch of water that moved much more swiftly. He began to search through his fishing vest for a particular fly. He smiled when he found a couple of them. "These flies are the only ones I know that will catch trout in this section of the river. I made them last night just for this spot. They're heavy enough to sink into that strong current, and they'll tempt those trout every time." He was right. We changed flies and immediately started catching larger trout. After a while, we returned to where that young man was fishing. He hadn't caught any fish yet and was obviously frustrated. "Stupid fish," he exclaimed. "They just aren't biting. I hate fishing." Our guide was a master fisherman. As the afternoon passed and we paid close attention to his instruction and his example, we slowly became more and more effective trout fishermen. Just as he'd said, it's all in the right lure on the end of your string and the right action on the pole. The fish are always there and can always be caught if you know how. If you'll close your tackle box for a moment and permit me to be your teacher, fishing guide, I'd like to share with you how to be a fisher of men in the classroom. And he goes on to say that he'll show you, this is the chapter about need. In order to choose the correct lure to catch your fish, you need to do that. You also need to have the optimum action on your pole to set the hook. In reality, fishing for men is a lot easier than fishing for trout. Not only are they a lot easier to see, but in almost every case, they won't run away until after the entire hour has been spent trying to catch them. Master fishers of men that I know seem to catch their whole class, every class section. They have mastered the skill of selecting the correct lure and then guiding the correct action with their pole. And for those of you who insist it's those stupid students who just won't pay attention, well, maybe it's time to put away your lures and close that red and yellow tackle box. The truth is that the fish are hungry, and you just missed one and another. What are the three? Who are the three characters? The guide,
the teenager, Bruce himself,
Bruce himself, I guess, I'm assuming. So three characters. So now, what would be one word to describe the guide?
Experience.
Thank you. Perfect. One word to describe Bruce, the author. Or maybe you need to use a phrase. That's okay.
Teachable.
Excellent. And one word to describe the teenager.
Arrogant.
Okay. Thank you. You know, so often we have this idea we're going to go in the classroom and we know how to do it. There's a situation which I heard about where there was a teacher, not you, that had the board came to him and addressed him, had to address some problems. Things weren't going well. And the board came to him to try to talk to him. He said, "Look, I've had a different teacher for every year of my school life, and I've taken the best from each one. And that's what I use." What can you do? Don't be that. Okay? Take advice. If you need help, ask advice from older, more experienced individuals. Ask the school board or chairman. So often we think we're superhuman, or we think maybe this is the middle of the year or February that you're having trouble, and you think, well, I can just scrape by till the end of the year, and then I'll never teach again. You know, just scrape by till then it'll be okay. Don't do that. Ask for help. They can help you. Maybe then it'll go so much better that you'll be just can't wait to teach the next year, because then now you learn something. All right, the second point, main point, is ignorance of technique. All right, this band is looking a little bit poorly, but let's just say, and I used this illustration before, let's say I'd like for you to eat this banana. So you just open up and take a big bite and chomp down. You want to try that?
Not really.
Okay. Why not? Don't you like bananas? Okay, it's technique. Did you know that, you know, you actually have to, of course you did, peel it first, and then it tastes good. But if we try to eat it whole, it's not going to taste good. You have to know what to do and how to do it. There's a right way to do it, and there's a wrong way to do it. Same in teaching. Point A is expecting books and gadgets to do the teaching. And this is, I'm not going to elaborate on this a lot, but how much time do we spend on our phones or computers? Maybe some of it is school related, possibly doing grades or research or something. How much time do we waste messing with our phones? And this can be a huge pitfall, I know for me. Sometimes we just have to say, okay, look, I'm going to put my phone over there on the other side of the room, and I'm going to have my stack of books here, and I'm going to check this, and then once I get finished checking this, then I'll go over there and check my texts and WhatsApps and see and talk to my friends about something. Or say, okay, maybe right after school lets out, I'll have 10 minutes that I spend catching up on maybe some messages and things like that, and then I'm going to put it away, and I'm going to do my work. If you're constantly every 5 minutes checking the phone for a message and trying to check at the same time, it doesn't work very well. And you can talk about time management, we won't go there, but that's just one thing I'd urge you to be careful. Sometimes you need to just put those electronics away and get your work done. Because then if you run out of time, then you end up being there 12 hours and you wouldn't have needed to be. Point B is not knowing the sequence of class presentation. There's things you can learn after teaching for a while about how to do class. You know, what should be done first? Do you have the students come up to the class table and you start teaching them first, or do you tell them to read the lesson at their desk before they come up to the class table so that they already know what you're going to be talking about and they have a little bit of understanding of where to go, and you can save yourself a lot of explaining. I've done this already where the students came up to the class table and I asked, you know, did you read your lesson? And yes. Did you understand the lesson? There's sometimes you can just say, okay, yes, they understand. Okay, so you have a couple problems on the board, and they work them out. They do them perfectly, no problems. Go back to your desk. We don't even have to have a class on that today. So have them read the lesson first. And again, this does not work in every situation, but that's something you can do. C is giving too much or too little work, and this is a really hard one to call. How do you know if that student is overworked or if he's just lazy? It's so hard to know. We have an ice cream maker we just bought, and we like to make homemade ice cream with it. I have my own cow out in the field that I milk it every morning, and so now we have plenty of milk, so we like to make ice cream. And anyway, you put the ingredients in there, and it's all just runny and nasty to start with. And the ice, you turn, plug the ice cream maker in, and it sits there and spins, and it's just going along merrily. And of course, it's not good. It's not ready to eat then. It's not good to eat then. And how do you know when it's ready? Well, after a while, you learn. There's a particular sound that ice cream maker starts making. When it starts going, yeah, 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 you know the ice cream is ready. You can't wait too long or you'll burn the engine up, because eventually it'll get so hard that it'll stop turning and then you burn the engine up. So you don't want to do that with your students. You want to listen for that sound, you know, yeah, yeah. And then you know you've got it about right. D is assigning without motivating. Assigning without motivating. Here's a question that you're going to hear this year in school. Can almost guarantee it. Maybe you already know what question I'm going to say. Any guesses?
Question Why do we have to do
this? Perfect. That's right. Do we have to do this? Or when are we ever going to use this? Questions that, and that can really intimidate you as a new teacher, because we take that as like, they're attacking me. Well, no, not always. And you have to think about how they're asking the question too. Some of them are, maybe they are asking because they really do want to know when they will use this. Or maybe they just don't want to do it, and so therefore they think that if you can't explain to them, then they don't why they should do it, then they don't have to do it. A good way to respond to that, besides having an answer ready for them, getting an answer ready for them now, another good way would be to just say, okay, that's an excellent question. I'll get back with you tomorrow with an answer to that, and go home and figure out why do they have to learn. We do need to have a reason for that. That's a really good question. If there's no reason for them to learn it, why are we teaching it to them? If they're never going to use it, then there needs to be a reason for them to learn that. There needs to be a good reason. And you make it practical. If you're doing fractions or something, you know, when will we ever do 3/8 × 3? Well, what about if you're making a cake and the recipe calls for a 3/8 cup of oil? Vegetable oil, okay? But you want to make a triple batch. So how are you going to know how to do that? Make it practical to their lives. If they're a framer or a cabinet maker, you know, maybe we have to put the knob right in the center of the door, and the door is 37 3/8 tall, but we want the knob to be directly in the center. What is half of that? How can you figure it out? Make it practical for them so that they can see the connection between learning this in school and applying it in real life. If you can do that, it'll be incredibly easier for you to teach it then, because they say, oh yeah, we will need to use that in school. All right, turn the page around now. The next side, E, is thinking for the students. I have another story I want to tell you. When I was in school, we were having lunch, and I had an orange in my lunch. And I gave it to my teacher. I said, "Teacher, can you peel this for me?" I was in fifth or sixth grade. I said, "Can you peel this for me?" He's like, "Sure, I'd be glad to." So I went on to eating the rest of my lunch, and he peels it. We were talking, and next just before lunch was over, I looked over there, and I was like, "Where's my orange?" Oh. He had already eaten the whole orange. Well, you know, as teachers, you may have to peel the orange for your students. You might have to help get it started. But let them taste the success in that problem. They need to taste it. Taste the success. If you're the one doing the working, then you're the one doing the learning. If they are the one doing the working, they are doing the learning. You have to let them experience the success of figuring it out. You might have to do some peeling for them. You might have to help them. But don't do all their thinking for them. The one who is working is the one who is learning. Ask lots of questions. It's very important. Ask lots of questions. And whenever possible, explain to them why they need to learn it. And give real life illustrations how they're going to use it. Okay, the third main point is poor planning. And along with that, we had mentioned earlier, if you're a first-year teacher and you don't know what to do to get ready for school, there is a paper here Jonah provided that has a checklist, everything you need to get done before school starts. So if any of you are interested in that, talk with Jonah. Okay, well, they're up here. You can pick them up afterwards, after class. Okay, A, neglecting important things to do urgent things. Let me give you an example. So, you're on the way to the airport, and you're a little bit late. Any of y'all ever missed your flight? Okay, it's not a fun thing. So, you're a little bit late, and then halfway there you realize, whoa, the car is about out of gas. Okay, what are you going to do? Which is more important? Filling up the tank or getting to the airport on time? Well, that's not... If we don't fill up the tank, then we may definitely not get to the airport on time. If we do fill it up, we might be a little bit late. But it's more important to fill the tank with gas than it is to get to the airport on time. If you run out of gas, then you definitely won't. So, but it feels more urgent. The filling the tank may not feel that urgent sometimes. It feels like you need to get to the airport on time. And it's the same way in school. School duties can seem very urgent sometimes. But which is more important? Having your morning devotions or finishing those report cards that are due, that are you supposed to hand out that day after school? See what I'm saying? What about prayer meeting? What about talking to your co-teacher? Your co-teacher comes in the classroom, you're right in the middle of doing checking a big pile of tests, and your co-teacher comes in and she's got some struggles that she wants to share with you. Don't neglect the important things to do the urgent things. B is failing to allow for the unexpected. How many of y'all know what Turkish delight is? Okay. If you read Chronicles of Narnia by C.S. Lewis, which I did, I can't remember if that was last year or the year before. There's a scene in there where the boy eats Turkish delight, and it's just so good. He just keeps eating more and more of it. And so my students got this brilliant idea, they did, that we should try to make Turkish delight. And so we looked it up and found a recipe for it. And we actually kind of designated a whole class period to make it. And we mixed things together and we boiled the water and the sugar and ended up not having enough time. And we finally did get it finished, but it was a total flop. Okay, but they were runny, they didn't get hard like they were supposed to. It was supposed to be a hard bar type thing, and it just did not turn out at all. And I should have tried to make it at home first before doing it at school. And we don't allow for the unexpected. You know, there were some things in there. It took a lot longer than I thought. But if I would have done that myself, I would have figured that out. And also that goes along with C, not planning in enough detail. So it's important when you're planning a lesson to do some of the problems yourself. If it's an experiment, do it yourself beforehand. Now even sometimes if you do that, you can still have things go wrong, as we learned in Jonah's other class. And you can ask him about that. D is worrying about having enough to say. Now, maybe you're not like me. My tongue, people have said that it has a hinge in the middle and moves and flaps to both ends. That's not really my problem. Most of the time, I talk too much. And here's the thought. If you keep on talking after your students have stopped listening, then you might as well be, it's like teaching after your students have walked out the door. It doesn't do any good to keep on talking. Most times, a few short word sentences is much better than going on and on about something. Their attention span is very short. Keep it short. Keep it short. Keep it concise. All right, the fourth main point is ineffective discipline. And this is probably every teacher that I know of seemed like that's a problem. How do you discipline? It's always a huge issue, it seems like. So here are some points in ineffective discipline. A is being afraid to discipline for fear the students will not like you. And again, that goes back to the beginning. I said, if you want the students to like you too much, being afraid to discipline because you're afraid the students won't like you. You know what? I've learned in teaching, students, they actually want you to take charge. They do. They want you to be in charge. They want you to straighten up Johnny when he's throwing spitballs across the room. They want you to do that. Even Johnny. He doesn't want you just to ignore him and let him get by with that. And he may not say that, but he wants structure. They want structure, and they want, so do that. Just be the teacher. Be in charge. B is adding rules or procedures after problems arise. And again, there are exceptions to this rule. Sometimes you may have to fix a mistake. You made a mistake earlier in the year. You didn't set up a procedure that you should have, and so then you have to do it. That's better than nothing at all. But it's best to get your procedures in place at the beginning of the year. You know, if you people that grow that raise dogs, they sometimes raise dogs, and dogs are, I guess people think the dogs are cuter without the tail, right? Seems like that's the way sometimes. And so they dock the tail off when the puppy's small. Now, what's the best way to cut off a dog's tail? Should you just cut it off, like, let's cut off 1 inch here, and then maybe a month later cut off another inch, and then another month cut off another inch? The poor dog. But sometimes we do that in school. They're misbehaving, so we make a rule. But then they misbehave here, and so we make another rule. And then we make another rule, and we're just cutting off the tail a little bit at a time. Just for example, students start messing around after recess. You know, the first day, of course, they come in right when you ring the bell. But then it kind of starts fizzling out, and maybe by February, then... I was teaching one time, and it was like 5 or 6 minutes. We were losing 5 or 6 minutes of class time because the students were messing around outside. They weren't coming in right away, or maybe they were using the restroom and getting a drink and filling their water bottles after they come in, and I didn't have my procedures in place like I said should. So some of that you can just at the beginning of the year say, look, okay, we're going to, and this is just it should be a procedure, not necessarily a rule. It's just a procedure. It's just the procedure is that you come in right after recess. As soon as I come in, I'm going to set the timer for 1 minute, and everyone's just supposed to be in by the time the timer goes off. I found that works wonders in getting the students to come in. And you know what? After a while, you can forget to set the timer and it won't matter. You can do it once a week. And they'll still be in there. And they can be in there in 30 seconds. I was like, at first I was like, should I do 1 minute or should I do 2 minutes? They can be in there in 30 seconds. And you have another 5 hours to teach if you add them all together. Or maybe it's a lot more than that probably. All right. Another example about making rules is sometimes it's better, instead of making a rule with a punishment attached, just make it, like I said, a procedure that is just expected. So here's an example. So in playing a game, this was when my wife was teaching again, they would play running games. And one of the problems that arose was students would catch other students with their feet. So they would be running and, you know, you'd dive out there and stick your leg out to catch them. And guess what happens? Students start tripping and falling and getting hurt. So, and I'm not at all faulting my wife on this or whoever, I'm not sure who it was exactly. You know, so they said, okay, look, if you catch someone with your feet, then you have to go in and stay in for 5 minutes. And that was important, that we have to deal with this. We can't let something like that go on. But I'm here to suggest that maybe, what about if we would just say, if you catch with your feet, it doesn't count. If someone catches you with your feet, then that doesn't count. You have to catch with your hands. It's just a procedure. That's the way we're going to do it. You have to catch with your hands. If you use your feet, it doesn't count. And I think that would take care of it. That's the way we did it when I started teaching. We changed it to just you have to catch with your hands. And I think that can sometimes something like that, I'm just using that as an illustration, sometimes something easy like that can take care of the problem versus punishing them, because maybe they're just used to doing it that way, and they're not trying to hurt each other. They're just used to doing it that way, and you can correct the problem simply by just maybe changing the results of that. Allow it to be a natural consequence versus making a punishment out of it. All right, C is over-lecturing instead of discipline. I need to be careful I don't over-lecture here. So here's a problem you might have. Johnny, at recess time, Johnny's team is losing, and there's no one here named Johnny. So, Johnny's team is losing, and he gets mad about it and just doesn't want to play, and so you call him off to the side, and you say, Johnny, or after he's calmed down a bit, you say, Johnny, you know it's wrong to get mad when your team is losing, right? So you're not going to do that again, right? Okay, great. Well, problem solved. We'll never have to deal with this again, right? No, I'm afraid that's not quite going to work. Maybe that's good for the first time. Tell them what you expect from them, what is considered. Sometimes they don't know what a good sport, being a good sport means. They don't realize that stomping your feet or kicking gravel is not being a good sport when your team is losing. So I mean, you might have to explain some of those things. But then when you've explained it, then next time, deal with it. There's a quote by Brian Tracy. He said, "When you must eat a frog, get it done." So in other words, postponing the discipline does not make it any easier. It only causes the students to lose respect for you. When you must eat a frog, just eat it. If there's two frogs to eat, eat the uglier one first. Get it done. It won't make it more. It won't make it easier or taste better by putting it off. It's just going to get worse if you ignore it. All right. D is trusting the students too much. Sometimes you have these students. I know they look like little angels, but unfortunately, they're still very human, and sometimes we just trust them a little too much. Sometimes we need to follow the biblical command of watching and praying. Try that sometime. When you have prayer, just keep your eyes open. Look around. See what your students are doing. One teacher did that and found out one of his students was standing on his head during prayer. Imagine that. How in the world did he get on that? I don't know. But you might learn something. E is not communicating with the parents or school board. And this is a really hard one for us. We don't like to go to the parents and talk to them about things. And we just, it seems like they should come to us, right? They should come to us and ask us how it's going with their students. Well, they don't do that all the time. So sometimes we need to communicate with them. And be sure to include positive and negative feedback. Don't just always go to them every time there's a problem. Call them up when the student gets a good grade or when the student does well. And especially if you give negative feedback and you're working on it, then when there's improvement, let them know. You know, look, hey, Johnny did really well today in being a good sport on the playground. He did much better. Thank you for your help in working with this. Make it a goal in your year of teaching. Every week, talk to one of your parents, one of your students. Every week, talk to one of your parents. Just, it can be anything. Talk to them about that. That's a good thing to do. There's an advantage. So looking at the bright side of things a little bit, there's maybe a lot of mistakes that you might make, but there is a lot of advantages in being a new teacher, being a novice teacher, or first-year teacher. Usually first-year teachers are willing to learn. They're willing to learn and be led. They don't walk in thinking that they know a lot of stuff about this. There's a freshness. When you study the lesson, maybe you're learning it for the first time. And so it's fresh on your mind. It's still exciting to you. Sometimes, those of us that talk for a number of years, some of this information gets old, and it's a little bit hard to make it sound fresh and exciting again. There's different advantages to being a first-year teacher. There's several. Even just your friendliness. You're not quite as hardened to some of the misbehaviors and cynical about bad grades and things like that some of us experienced teachers are. You can sympathize with your students. You remember how it was when you were in school and things like that. In closing, you're going to make mistakes. Again, that you can't always miss every single pothole. That's okay. Like I said, I have lots of experience in falling into pitfalls, so I feel very qualified to teach this class. But don't get discouraged when you make mistakes. The Bible says in Proverbs 1:5, "A wise man will hear and will increase learning, and a man of understanding shall attain unto wise counsel." Proverbs 24:16 says, "For a just man falleth 7 times, but then he gets up again." You're going to fall. Just get up again. Learn from your mistakes. There is only one dumb mistake to make, and that's the one that you keep on making. Okay? The only dumb mistake is the one that you keep on making. Learn from your mistakes. Listen to advice from others. Stop, look, and listen. So many times we fall into the potholes because we're not paying attention. And you can't focus on, you heard of the illustration, someone's driving down the road. Should you focus on the ditch, on staying out of the ditch? We keep our eyes on the ditch so we don't drive into the ditch. Well, then we sometimes end up going into the ditch. So we don't focus on them. But we do have to watch out for them. Stop, look, and listen. And pray often. God can give wisdom in every situation. And I've learned that to be so true over the years. He will give you wisdom if you pray and ask Him. Your takeaway is being aware. Awareness of the common pitfalls is the first step to staying out of them. Watch out for those pitfalls and blessings as you teach.